Nerd Appropriate presents exclusive coverage of the BioWare base, recorded live at PAX Prime 2013.
All right, welcome to the Rated NA podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. As you'll notice, this is not a numbered podcast. We're doing a whole special series for you.
Yeah, we're going to be bringing you a total of 12 different podcasts recorded live at the BioWare base this year's PAX Prime. So make sure to click subscribe and enjoy.
To the very last panel at the BioWare Base 2013 PAX Prime.
Yay!
I know, it's very, very sad. And with one, I guess, a bit of excitement. So this is called Behind the Scenes, a.k.a. I suppose breaking our NDAs.
Yeah.
Well, stuff we're not allowed to talk about?
Yes. Well, Jess, I'm wondering, could we maybe talk about, like, what it took to make that demo?
You want to do that?
Yeah. Sure. I think that would be a much better plan than what Mark wanted to do.
Oh, Jesus, yes. I don't even know what he wanted, but yes, it's going to be a better plan than that.
So why don't we go into when exactly this plan came together and what blood, sweat, and tears it took to make the beautiful, fine, cherishing people here get to see that.
So we first started talking about showing at PAX in March, I want to say.
No, well, you and I had our very first member. So were you guys here for the – you don't remember? Okay, well, I remember. Do you guys remember the 2012 PAX Prime panel?
Okay.
Where we came. Yeah. And how many of you helped sing Mark Happy Birthday?
I do remember that.
And then Felicia Day showed up. It was off the hook. It was that night. Because the thing is, story here in that you know, there'd been people being like, oh, God, you won't get anybody. And you know, DA2, man. And it's 9 at night. And nobody's going to come out and see you. And I, of course, had been having these, like, fever dreams of that old lady from Princess Bride going, boo! and that was pretty fucking nerve-wracking, right? And boo! Yeah, well, it was probably you hovering near my bed, you creepy. But here's the thing. So we go, and we get there, and, like, the room fills up. And then I'm sorry if you got turned away. Like, we had to turn, like, 400 people away. Yep. And it was, like, a 1,200 person. And I was like, holy shit. Really? This happens at PAX? It was our first PAX. We were kind of excited and obviously terrified in equal measure. And I remember saying to Mark that night as we kind of slumped down over a beer going, holy cow, that was intense. We should totally come back. And we should show a game here one of these days because nobody's doing it. Right, and I think that was the first discussion we had. And then we all went, oh, that's crazy. And then in March, we started talking about it more.
That's a good point. Yeah. Yes, that is the story.
Wow. That was the third day that I worked at BioWare.
Really?
Yeah.
Good job.
At that panel was the third day I worked at BioWare.
Oh, good job.
You did a good job. You guys had T-shirts with like anagrams.
Oh yeah, we were wearing our.
No one understood.
We were wearing our.
Internet figured it out like in an hour.
We were wearing our Exalted March shirts. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, we didn't do the Exalted March.
Yeah, you guys didn't have shirts this time.
I'm wearing a shirt. Oh, I'm still wearing my 17-year-old shirt. I haven't had time
to change
it.
Different panel. So yeah, what went into making this demo? What are some things that people should know about the making of this panel?
There are people back in Edmonton still asleep because they busted their ass to get it here.
Yep.
It was a crazy amount of work from every department to show off what we want to do, you know, in the actual setting and tools and this is going to be the game. You know, we want to show people that.
This is actually probably one of the realest pieces of code that we've ever shown. It is most representative of the current state of the actual engine, the current state of systems. There's not a lot of smoke and mirrors stapled onto the side to disguise it, which is very impressive, because usually what happens in the middle of making something you're going to show to the public, if you're not shipping, is that you just start getting out the binder twine. Oh, arm reference. Getting out the... I can't come up with anything other than binder twine.
Duct tape.
Thank you.
Bailing wire, yes. Bailing wire, yeah. Staples, sutures, yeah. Yeah, and I think, the huge thing was, we did set that goal for ourselves, which was to not fake it, right, which everybody thought was crazy, rightly so. But, you know, what we saw coming out of that was I'd say we pushed on it hard for about 8 weeks, right, about that?
Yeah,
about eight full weeks. You saw, and what you saw was the pride of the craftsman show up. We went and made sure we got the voice actors we intend to use for the game. Mm-hmm. Nothing is final until we actually ship. But anyway, who you heard is probably who we're getting. Combat made huge strides. Sebastian and his team, who most of whom are here, working. Woo! Pushing so hard on getting the AI working properly, getting enemies that actually behave the way that not only that we wanted them to for the demo, but in a way that, you know, a level designer could then start using for the rest of the game, was enormous. I know Steve down there?
Steve has left.
Well, then I won't say it. No, Steve. I mean, I remember we were like, well, we don't want to do, we don't reveal too many new followers, so let's make sure we have Varric. And Steve went, Varric is completely custom animation. Okay. Yeah.
Something that consistently amazes me from animation, actually, is if you look really closely, and you may not have noticed it because it looks so natural, which is exactly the point. If you watch as we move around in that demo, as we walk on the hills or walk on the, especially on the sideways slope, the player will lean and...
Lots of people spotted that. So many people have mentioned that to me. So, you know, just that little, getting stuck in the mud.
And that stuff.
Now, and I want you to look at that moment when he's walking in the mud, and now imagine the zombies is coming. Because I'm going to do that to you.
Actually, I took a lot of reaction videos after the event on Saturday until actually I got kicked out of the theater. But from you all, and I'm going to take those back and to show them to our developers at BioWare.
What percentage of those have me talking in the background?
None of them. Actually, one.
All of them.
That's the kind of thing that we're going to take back to them, because they are, some of them, still sleeping. And when they wake up, they're going to want to know how it went. And your energy is what we take back. You fill us up with that, and we can take it and give it to them and help them through.
Hey, Mel, do you need any more reaction videos?
Yes.
Would you guys help us if we, Mel got her phone out, and maybe we could take one short reaction
video? I want
to
do this too.
But a big one. hold on, we'll do it.
Anybody have an iPhone?
You know, we tried, and the screen almost melted, so.
Oh, yeah.
It's too metal.
We did. Aaron Flynn was like, hey, Jessica.
Hey, let's just radically change the program.
He was like, hey, Jessica, what would happen if we showed the demo? And I was like, okay, well, we could position it such as this. And he was like, oh, it looks like shit. Never mind. Let's not do it.
There, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. So if you guys wanted to give us your reaction to the Dragon Age panel on 3, 2, 1.
Love you guys.
We didn't even ask you guys to clap that loud.
I know.
Or long.
We didn't have to pump the crowd. It was cool.
One thing that I want to say that is, I think, really cool. A lot of our developers came out here actually on vacation. We didn't pay them to come here, and we didn't pay them to be on panels. They just were like, can we just come and be on some panels? And they came on their vacation time because coming here actually gives them like XP and is like taking like health potions. They get back and it rejuvenates them. So it's just, you guys make them feel all fuzzy warm.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Ooh, I just dinged.
Yeah.
I feel tingly,
Holy
actually.
Shit, he did. So let's talk about the invisible part of a demo you never think of. So the thing is when you're doing a live code demo, such as we were, have you guys ever watched your buddy play a video game? Does it look good? No, it looks ridiculous. It's like, why are you in the corner? What are you doing? You know, your urge to backseat drive goes absolutely crazy. And when you're showing something new, right, you know, with specific goals, like, you know, it's like, you know, it'd be nice if we actually did go near the mud so that people could notice it building up on our boots.
Yeah.
So for that, you need your drivers. And Bruce Venn, who's actually standing over there under the BioWare logo, and Blair, Brown Blair, Brown, who's sitting just there to the nose lab.
By the way, Blair packed a suit, but for some reason decided not to wear it on stage. Yeah. He wore it to dinner.
Somebody told me it was a fancy dinner, but apparently it was just me.
So Blair, since you're up here, Bruce went through the same thing. Let's talk about driving boot camp. How'd that go, and how'd it feel?
That was a nightmare. So the thing about showing a game versus playing a game, it's the most counterintuitive thing you can possibly think of. So normally you have a third-person camera, you're looking more down because you need to see where you're walking and stuff like that. I had three art directors watching
me
play, and
the
studio head.
All of whom are large, muscly, and bald.
Yeah. Sitting in my office every day to be like, no, bring that camera down. You need to be looking at the sky. But I'm like, I can't see where I'm running. They're like, it doesn't matter where you're running. Just show the hills, show the mountains. Combat was especially difficult to show. I want to show the enemies hitting me. But I, as a player, like, I don't want to get hit by the enemies. But to show that, it's like, well, it's really cool when that guy hits you because that's a really cool move. You want to show the crowd and stuff. So it was very stressful, and I don't know how I'm going to play our game for real after this. Just be looking at the sky the whole time. So yeah, it was stressful, but yeah, it was fun.
Blair, you should have told me. I have a bunch of Xanax.
Yeah, so I think Blair hits on a very important point, is watching a game is definitely very different from playing a game. So there's a lot of stuff that's gone into this to make it
show well.
Yeah, to show well. Make it look more like what it feels like when you're playing, if you can follow that sentence.
That makes sense.
So actually a really good side point there is you know, if you have friends or if you yourself are like, well, I don't know, this combat seemed a little easy. Now you know why.
Yes.
You know, watching a real boss battle, you know, that takes 15 minutes is a little repetitive, a little dull, you know, because eventually you get into kind of a cycle and a rhythm and stuff, and if you don't have your hands on the controller and you aren't feeling that stress, it can really drag the experience down. And so when we originally had, like, the behemoth, he was, like, full health, and it was, you know, like, we're out of time, you know, and he's still like, you know. So making sure that you know, you have to scale the experience to try and show the intent. Okay, he's got huge hits, he sends you flying, you know, but you can take him down. So dirty developer secret, Cassandra Shield Bash does something like, what is it, so like 15 times its normal effect. How much armor has he got? All the armor, but that's okay. Bam! It's a little overpowered because, again, the thing is, when you're doing this kind of demo, and again, if you have any aspiring developers out there, the goal is not to show the specifics of the game. The goal is to show the intent,
yeah.
Right? And in this case, the intent is that there are moves that are specifically designed to counter certain enemy benefits, right? So, and a good driver like Blair can make that sing, right? You know, he's out there with his sword out and rolling clear a dragon fire and making it look amazing. And the thing is, those are all real mechanics. But, you know, when you're showing it, you do have to take that extra attention.
I think combat was getting tired of me walking into their room every day being like, can you just drop the hit points just a little bit more? It's like, no, it's really imbalanced. I just don't want to screw up Firestorm because it's not killing everybody. It's like, it has to kill everybody. It's the big moment. It must kill all people. make it more strong, but it's so imbalanced for the game.
It does do like 20,000 points of damage, like now, I think.
Slightly out of scope. Yeah.
So why was it important to you guys to show this demo at PAX specifically? I know PAX is a consumer-facing event. It's not like E3 or Gamescom, which is more traditionally like press, press, press.
For me, it is about you guys. It is about showing it to the fans first. You're an important part of the process. So the press got to see it too. Mike and I actually...
In fact, dare I say the press saw it first.
Well, yeah. Sorry, yes. But they weren't allowed to talk about it.
Yeah.
Mike and I actually got here on Wednesday, I think. And we did 2 days of press before PAX. That's why all that stuff suddenly materialized at 2 p.m., because that's when the embargo lifted and they were allowed to talk about what they saw, which was pretty much exactly what you guys saw. We compressed it a bit for them because...
Plus it opened smoother.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it worked.
That's because
no problem.
That's true. No Teamsters unplugged any cables with the press.
Which is to say you guys saw the real one.
Yeah.
I overheard some press guys cursing that the fans were tweeting their news story ahead of time.
Yes, they. So that is actually an interesting point. Is you guys weren't under embargo?
Yeah,
they were under embargo until 2 p.m. So you actually beat them out.
The
got more facts right.
Yeah. Yes. Well, you at least knew our names. There's the construct arch mastermind behind the Dragon Age series named Mike Dareth.
Do not name his name.
He actually has a Twitter account. By the way.
Mike Dareth doesn't come to PAX though. PAX attends Mike Dareth.
Yes.
I don't even remember what site got that wrong, but it was pretty hilarious. I'm like, which one of us was that? I mean,
I think to Mark's point, we did it because of you guys. That moment when Mark said, or Mike, whoever in the patter said, we didn't bring you here to show you a PowerPoint, we brought you to show you gameplay, and everybody just lost their shit. And I walked out, and my heart's just like, holy fuck, holy fuck. And then it crashed, and I'm losing my mind. that moment where it's like the first hook shot and everybody lost it. And to me, that was such a minor move in the game. And everybody's like, oh, my God, somebody screamed, get over here. And I'm like, yes, that's what it's about. That moment for me is why I'm glad we did this.
You guys are really, really inspiring. And we wanted that connection. We want to know what you think every step of the way. And this was a very awesome weekend and a way to do that. So thank you.
Yeah. So Jacques' team, the programming team, are really, really busted to get a lot of these. Like some of the things you wouldn't think would be programming. Obviously, having to develop the procedural system so that walking on slopes, walking up hills, going over small obstacles so that tiny fences are no longer a critical showstopper. That we developed kind of in anticipation of PAX. Your guys push on that. The tactical.
Yeah. None of that was there. Eight weeks ago.
Right.
Yeah.
What else? What else did you guys crank through? There were some pretty enormous wins.
The biggest ones were there was no TAC cam.
Right.
8 weeks ago. That's when we started working on it.
There was a dream.
There was a dream.
There was a plan.
A fever dream.
Yeah. That's all there was, though.
The procedural locomotion was the other big one.
Parabolic projectiles, which is why, like, originally that first throw that Blair was talking about, like, it just kind of shot out of your arm and looked so fake. And now it actually can travel in a parabola, which also lets us do things like trebuchets and throwing grenades and... Actually, yeah. Oh, God.
The boat thing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. The Mark Dara presents burning the boats in real time.
Yes.
Yeah, because our systems, one of our systems leads had done the whole system where, you can equip potions and drink them now. And so, we actually added the rock armor to the demo kind of because that work had been done, right? Oh, good, the GUIs are there, the icons are there, great, that's fantastic. Well, let's show off that that's a part of the game. But we did want to show that interaction outside of just press A to burn boat. So that was not easy. If Matt Berner's here, thank you for that. That was a lot of late nights for him. But yeah, that one That one's an important one because it does go to the point of you know, can we interact with things in a way that isn't just, you know, in proscribed manners and basically tests, like, do you have a fireball or some equivalent ability or spell?
So for a while you could light the boats on fire with judgment.
Yeah, yeah. Any damage, basically, yeah. They burst into flames. They were like that cornballer from Arrested Development. Just, God. Yeah.
I don't know how you connected those things. I mean, I guess it got hot. But
it got. I don't know. They were like oh shit. Was it the Yugo that burst into flames? Random. The Pinto. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You just hit him from behind.
Do you guys want to open up to questions now, or do you have more Arrested Development?
I kind of want Blair to tell us about food and the acquisition thereof for a bunch of starving late night developers.
In general,
because that's the thing is I don't know if you guys realize this, but like part of the thing the production department does, and they take turns, is, you know, when it's like, well, we're going to need to stay late on this one, they'll bring in pizza, they'll bring in catered food,
pizza sandwiches,
not pizza.
No, yeah, I got told not to do pizza anymore, so that stopped showing up. No, we don't take turns. That's why I was hired. I'm now the crunch food guy. Yeah, that's all I do now.
Good job.
Order food.
Drive games.
You drive games and order food.
Drive games. Order food. No.
So you're like a stoner.
A professional stoner.
Professional stoner, yes.
No comment. No, yeah, it's food every day. All the good stuff. Developers hate everything I bring in. It'll always be 10 people out of the 20. They're like, I hate hamburgers. And I'm like, okay, well, tomorrow will be pizza. I hate pizza, too. It's like, okay, well, I don't really know what to order for you then. So,
rice cakes.
Yeah. I have lists of like 17 places I order from now, and they all hate me because the order is like, oh, I need 50 food for 50 people at like 5:30 on a Friday, and they're not too happy when I place that. But make games.
Check and shut up.
You had one job, restaurant. So, yeah, I'm done now.
Mel, this is the second panel where we were talking about insightful things, and then we talked about food.
I know. You guys didn't even answer my question from the last panel very well. We just started talking about food.
Which one? The commando one?
She wanted to talk about, like, fatherhood and, like, growing up
and maturing. I gave, like, this whole thing about, like... mine was touching.
Okay, yours was touching, and then...
And you totally know what it did to me.
Yeah.
Food. Okay, let's take some questions.
I was wondering, in the trailer, was there anything that you noticed was incorrect, but nobody else noticed, because... we didn't notice it.
Yes.
I bet.
There's a lot.
I bet Blair thought, like, 18.
I watched, somebody has posted, like, shaky cam videos of stuff, and it's just, it's like, I'm a musician, so I hear songs that I've played or live performance, you're like, oh, I screwed up, I could have done it. That whole video, it's like 32 minutes of, I'm like, oh no.
Why would
he walked, and then he jogged, and he jogged, because I was like shaking, trying to get him to that right speed to show it off powerfully and stuff. So it's full of all that.
There was a, at the end of the conversation where you talked to the Inquisition guard, where people just kind of blooped for just a second, and I know there are five people back at BioWare in Edmonton with
fuck!
I know that happened. Free pins.
Glad those didn't bounce. I could have been hurt.
So I loved the demo, and it looked amazing. But one thing that I also noticed about it is it looked very expensive. And I know that, like, you know, the first Dragon Age, like, you know, took like forever and was way over budget, and the second Dragon Age was, you know, very aggressively within budget. I still like it a lot, and I really did. And I was just wondering.
Busted.
And I was just wondering, you know, what was the sort of internal debate over that? Like what made you guys think, like, you know what, we're just going to go all in? And was Skyrim and their success at all a factor in those decisions?
Certainly, fantasy's kind of on a bit of a bender right now. So Skyrim's part of that, Game of Thrones, The Hobbit. So that certainly factors into the ambition we can put before ourselves. The interesting thing about BioWare is that ultimately the way we build games is different from the way a lot of other companies do. So we build a lot of... We build our tools first. So we build... So it takes a long time to build a Ford assembly line. Mm-hmm. But once you do, it becomes relatively quick to build Fords. So we've got an assembly line mostly put together now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We had an awesome producer on the demo named Chris Pickford. He was amazing. And he had a similar point to that, which was sometimes demos in the stream of production of an entire game can feel like rocks in a stream because they hold up time you could have been otherwise working on content. But the nice and wonderful thing about demos is that sometimes they actually feel more like, I don't know, logs rushing down the stream because they help put procedural things or features or non-content things more like systems together that you might not otherwise have pulled off because it's pushing the team or pulling the team forward to do something by a more internal deadline, which is a more realizable or realistic deadline than the 2 years from now thing or the 1 year from now thing that's down the road or down the stream. And they are actually really useful things that way because they do a lot for momentum and they do a lot for morale even because you're working together for a very close goal and you do have that. Those late nights and all of those things together, there is a feeling of camaraderie and a feeling of family that develops from that. And if you're lucky, that just continues through the rest of the project, and you don't lose that. So they can be really useful things.
And as to the game itself, with Inquisition, I mean, you know, Mark and I sat down right at the beginning, and we basically said, so we're making ourselves, you know, the successor to Origins, which, you know, kind of implies some very specific things. I mean, there's big parts of Dragon Age 2 in the DNA, for sure, the speed, the kind of responsiveness. You saw that in the playthrough. But there's a size, you know, kind of mandate. There's a story, kind of level of epicness. All those things are part of it. And as Jacques will attest, I'm pretty good at making a big game. Maybe too good. But the big thing is you can kind of set yourself some lofty goals, and we wanted to have some ambition. And a big part of what we were doing was acknowledging that by moving to Frostbite, we were doing a complete engine change. There was a chance to overhaul a number of things and to try and say, if we're ever going to make a move to get exploration back on the radar in a big way, if we're ever going to make a change to the way our plots are structured and tackle some of those pet features like getting conversations you can just walk away from, now is exactly the right time, right? And that is something that the whole studio is really aligning itself towards, is acknowledging that player freedom is a key thing. And for you to get some player freedom, you need to be super ambitious, right? Because the temptation as a developer is always to limit, because you might break stuff. But, you know, I have to trust that you guys can handle the responsibility of perhaps not being led by the nose. Because I think you're pretty good at that.
And also the fact that we're moving more than one title to Frostbite is letting us take on that ambition. We're building one set of tools, whereas previously we had multiple sets of tools, and that's insanely expensive to maintain. So moving all our titles to Frostbite is letting us take on additional challenges that we otherwise wouldn't have.
And just the clarity of that. I mean, speaking as somebody who's in a department, departments such as editing, VO, localization, there's departments that will work across all franchises. And in the past, I've had upwards of 8 different tools and tool sets. To go back and have just one is such an awesome dream because everything works the same way and there's a consistency. It's just great.
And if that gets efficient enough, we can go bigger and bigger, but we can also go smaller and intimate because it gives us the freedom to do interesting little things.
That's just terrifying.
Okay. I'm sure it'll be okay, Mark, Dara.
Gosh, Luke, you're such a tease, I tell you.
Is it time for the Spanish Inquisition?
So this is more of a general behind the scenes than demo specific behind the scenes, and this question will contain pen and paper role playing terms.
Oof. Hope I remember them.
On the different departments of the team working, when we approach companions, are they approached more as a game master PC, as in the game master controls them and the player and the rest of the players have a little interaction? Does the team think of them more as a pre-generated character players, whereas the GM hands a pre-generated character to the player and then the player does with them within the bases as they want?
Sorry, is that for the party members?
Yes.
Oh, so I think to get back to your I guess your, I think this goes back to second edition D&D. I think they would fall in the realm of henchmen, if I'm remembering that right, which gave the player a lot of control over, like, you have, you know, the according to the hard and fast rules of pen and paper role playing, which shouldn't really be there. You could equip them, you could help them level up and stuff. They became kind of subordinate characters to yours, but usually the DM would handle their motivation and their overall goals. And I think that's pretty much exactly what we're creating and what we always have. Yeah. Does that work in terms of terminology?
Yeah, I was thinking more of how else do you ask the team to think of creating. So it's I would say from that perspective, they are treated more like, so from the point of view of game systems, they're treated more like a pre-generated character that's fully in control of the player. From a storytelling perspective, they're more like a DM-controlled character. So it's kind of like you're doing both. We're not letting the player decide what Morgan is going to say in Origins.
Morgan is not in the party, to be clear.
Yes.
In Inquisition, I mean, yeah. Just to be clear.
Yeah.
Seriously.
So hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah, we try to treat them as people in their own right from the writing department, obviously. Yeah. But we also use that character to inform their development, like mm-hmm. their look. We work closer with the concept art team on this project than we have with any other, mm-hmm. to ingrain everything about them, and we're doing that with the combat team as well. How does this character feel about blah in the world? Mm-hmm. Well, then we'll inform their abilities this way. Like this character is afraid of magic. They won't have magic and stuff. They may have something that has a similar effect, but that's just a simple dressing that'll give you just, you know, still character depth to them.
I really enjoyed the demo, by the way. One of my favorite concepts from the previous game was the cross-class combos, and they were really important to the gameplay in that one. Didn't see a whole lot of that in the demo, and I'm just wondering if there's still a big feature in Inquisition.
So there actually is one in there. I think Blair managed to pull it off.
Yeah, Frost Trap, and then switching to Cassandra, and I don't know what that charge into him and blew him up.
So we're at the moment we're hiding. We're doing it more with the presentation is more in world. So a frozen character is frozen, as opposed to just has a snowflake floating above their head. So yes, they do exist. They're just presented in a different way right now. Oh. Okay. Sab's making all kinds of weird faces over there.
Would you like to
add a comment?
Sure. Our lead combat designer.
Just sit with us. Come join
Sebastian
us.
Sebastian joins the panel.
If this mic is live, there we go. Brilliant. Elaborating on that, the one thing that we're trying to do in Inquisition that's a little more interesting than the strict cross-class rules we had in DA2 is just making that effect-based interaction where, you know, maybe I have one warrior who stuns someone and then somebody else has a talent that exploits stun and it could be another warrior, or if you have the if you have those abilities on the same character, just making sure that we have enough opportunities for all the party members to interact with each other and interact, you know, create opportunities for each other to interact during combat, if that makes sense.
What's the maximum weight of that this stage can hold, just in case I start pulling up more and more people from the team?
Hillary?
A lot.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Not any other question, Hillary.
What? The next best question?
You should assume there's...
The next best question. It sounds bad, too.
Oh, man, I love that demo. I'm still talking about it with as many people as possible.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mitchell.
Oh, absolutely. So what are some of your favorite features and content that you can talk about currently in the game?
For me, it's that's really hard for me to do because I think a Bioware game is at its best when everything starts to knit itself together into an overarching whole. One of the things that for me is really great about Inquisition is the sense of you being a leader, you being the primary actor in the world. So that's combat, that's the keep system, that's making your mark on the world, that's the way we're storytelling, all of that stuff coming together into one thing.
Mm-hmm. I think for me, I've always been, well, okay, I kind of love all the features. They're all my pretty children. But I'm kind of the writer at a distance, right? I can't actually go in and tackle it. But the followers, and I won't go into details, but the followers that we've got and the ones that I've had the privilege of doing read-throughs on are pretty spectacular this time around. There's some really good interplay, some really good tension between them. So they're coming along nicely. In terms of stuff that I can get into more detail, I have been carrying a torch for the conversation system that you can walk away from for a long time. That's something we prototyped many moons ago, and it never quite saw the light of day. It was never quite the right time to put it in. And we're still tuning it, but, yeah, just the agency that gives you to be able to you know, someone, you walk up, someone seamlessly goes, oh, hello there, and if you want to talk, you can, and if not, away you go. For me, is an incredibly powerful thing, and it was good to tackle. Like, I think there should be no sacred cows in game development, right? It's like, well, we've done conversations like this for so long. I remember when it was first being developed, or the EP we were working with at the time, right at the end of Jade Empire, we were doing some prototype stuff, and he said, I want to be able to walk away from anything, anytime, anywhere. You remember that, Luke? And we got it working, and it tripled the size of every conversation because they had to have different goodbyes, and it was brutal. But we've refined it since then, and so for me, it's just such a cool thing to take something that's been so fundamental and been so kind of unchanging, and go, oh, cool. Here's something new we can do with it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Another thing that gets us. Conversations you can walk away from gets you conversations you can walk with. That gets you interactive banter. So if you're out in the wilderness and people are nattering behind you, they can throw it to you now and then. And if you just keep on walking, they can recognize that.
From somebody from audio and voiceover production, that actually frees us to be able to give you better performances because we can do better interrupts, we can do better timed scenes just from an actor sitting in a booth perspective. It frees them to do a better job of their character. It's fabulous.
Dragon fights.
Dragon fights.
That's my favorite part.
And audio in general, actually, I love, it's not really a feature to answer that question, but it is some of the audio in this game and some of the systems that we are able to use with the Frostbite engine, from everything from the way we record VO to the way that we use matrices and in sounds that are more naturally generated so that it doesn't sound as repetitive, we can make it less annoying for a 60 to however long hour game.
I must go.
Yeah, it is. There's no more you have to go. It's a little better. Yeah, so... It's
going to
be
fun,
great.
Fun audio fact, the sound guys have actually developed a system for any motion used in conversation now interacts with the armor and modifies itself based on the armor you're wearing. So if you shrug in plate mail, it dynamically changes so it goes ka-ching on you. Yeah, they got that. And the thing you will never notice, because it seems so obvious, but the closest 10 trees emit creaks as they move in the wind.
Yeah.
So there's actually positional tree sounds, dynamically generated.
A lot of the things that have impressed me have been, you know, audio guys running by going, check out this cool thing. It's amazing. You got to check this out. And you run to their office and you look on their screen and you listen to their amazing speakers and you just kind of go, whoa.
Or half the time it's so natural you go, what? And they look super crestfallen, and then they go, here, let me turn it off, and you go, oh, whoa, that's totally missing. Yeah, so it's really nice.
Hello.
Hello.
So I've got a question on, you know, it's not one of the flashier part of the games, but it's my favorite parts, like the codex entries, and when you're going into the histories and things that you just don't have time to have conversation about with the characters. And I just kind of wanted to hear you guys talk about that. Like, is it stuff that you wanted to include in conversations and didn't have time? Was it just extra stuff? Other ways to interact with the codex, maybe?
Well, the nature of conversation means you got to record that, and it's expensive, and it has to be done well in advance, and we lose the places we can cheat. Mm-hmm. You know, back in the day, nothing's recorded. You know, you still need to get it translated, but that's, you know, that takes X amount of time as opposed to amount of time. Mm-hmm. So you lose your safety nets very, very quickly when you're working to the level of polish we want to achieve. There's still room to move, but a great place to put things is text only, just because it allows us to expand on the lore in ways that aren't somebody just blah, 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 in your face. And you can find that, and you know, there's plenty of games that have explored how powerful that is. I mean, you look at Infinite that just came out. Like the story is there; it's not in your face, though. It's you find it, and the depth of the world for Inquisition and for Origins and all these is there. If you want to engage with it. And the Codex is a weird beast, because part of the benefit of it is not, oh, I read that and I loved it. It's we get a lot of people who are like, yeah, I love that's there. I don't read them, but wow, I love that it's there. And like, oh. So we're taking, we're really looking at the Codex to try and make it more accessible to people, so you don't have to go digging. Like DA2, people lamented, like, oh, we missed the item descriptions that you had, in the previous games we missed those. We had some; they were there. There were some. They just gave you codex entries, and then you had to go friggin' digging for them, and you couldn't find them. And it's frustrating for us too that these gems are buried, and we want to expose that to more people.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is that. You don't walk up to someone. Like, when I landed in Seattle for PAX, I didn't walk up to somebody and say, tell me about Seattle. Tell me more about Seattle. So there's some information.
That's enough about Seattle. I have some other things I'd like to ask. Yeah.
So there's
I am a normal human being.
There are some things that really don't belong in conversation. You don't interact with people in some ways. So.
Hey, you guys want to know something cool?
Okay, fine.
All right, cool then.
That's why you can't have
that's
nice
things.
That's
the end
things.
Of our panel. Thanks for coming.
You know what you're not going to find, well, probably more than one of? Speaking of items, ring. You're going to find rings with names. Yeah, that's a real thing.
Generic stuff.
Yeah, so a number of people push very hard on that. The LOC team being able to dynamically generate names for stuff and then translate them in a very smart way. And Josh Stixman, one of our systems guys, sitting down one week going, I'm going to fix this, and developing an entire system for magical attributes.
Wasn't that
and
system
stuff.
Called Ring?
It was called Ring. That's, yes.
The random item name generator.
That's right. Yep. That's right. Which I thought was a stroke of absolute genius. So,
and then one of our programmers, Sydney Tang, and Chris Two, and Tom Zaplachinsky, at the time, they had to take that. And if any of you know another language, verbs and nouns and adjectives don't always go in the same order. They all flip around, and some of them have weird endings and stuff, depending on whether you're speaking formally, informally, or male or female or whatever. They figured out how to make that work, and they did it in an amazingly short, efficient time. And we thank you for them, because
if you're sitting there in, I don't know, Germany, and everybody else gets to play a game with the Masterful Sword of the Wolf, and you get one that says sword, you feel a little bit like a second-class citizen. So
also, you'd wonder why there was an English word in your game.
I don't know what the German word for sword is, but whatever it is.
So weird.
Yeah.
By the way, Josh is right back there. I just spotted him. He's doing
Hi, Josh.
Really...
Wave,
He's
Josh. Talking.
Hey, you want to come up on stage, Josh?
Yay.
Come on.
Come on, Josh. Come on.
I asked how many people the stage would hold.
Hillary says the stage can hold
come
a
Come on,
people.
Josh. The stage won't fall down.
Come.
Just do it.
Look, there's an extra chair up here.
You may recall Josh from that Game Informer video that made the internet lose its shit because how dare we play with a console controller? How dare we?
Was that the one where Aaron Flynn like walks around the
Yeah,
studio,
that's where
like,
Aaron that's where Aaron randomly walks in and out of frame like in four different shots.
He's
yeah.
Like...
do, do 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 Aaron, always on the move.
He's a dynamic and proactive individual. He's got things to do, people to see.
Wait, we have questions.
Actually. I like what you guys have had to say so far about the use of the Frostbite engine. I'm just wondering if going forward with your games, if that's going to mean that there's going to be even better parity with all console versions and PC ports, for instance. Are they going to look and play identically when these next generation of games like Inquisition and the next Mass Effect come out?
Well, I don't know what the plan is for Mass Effect. I would think the same as what I'm about to say. On the PC, they won't play identically because we will support... Am I going to sign Jacques up for something here? I am! We will support a console plugged into the PC.
A controller. A
gamepad.
Yeah. What the hell did I just say?
A console.
Yeah, we won't support what you just said.
We will.
Any console you can plug into your PC. My N64 says hi.
Yeah.
We will support a controller plugged into the PC. Mm-hmm. However, if you're playing with the mouse and keyboard, that will actually change not the way that the systems work, but like the user interface will be built
custom
for that.
Yeah.
Woo! Yeah, in terms of scalability between the different platforms, Frostbite definitely is a very scalable engine, so we can target the strengths of each platform.
But let's be realistic here. The Xbox 360 will probably not look quite as nice as the PC or the newer consoles.
True.
Or the PS3, right?
It looks surprisingly nice though.
Yeah, it's we've done some early tests and it's very promising. It's not going to look horrible, but you know, more horsepower means you can bigger loads up the hill.
Yes. So
we have time for a few more questions. Let's make sure, Hillary, that people who haven't had time to ask a question get priority.
Let's also try and ask a question to Josh, because he's up here.
I guess this is a question for all of you. This is going back on the codex thing. Can we have, like, I know you did this with Mass Effect, where the Galaxy at War thing was a kind of a codex that you could access via any phone device. Could we just have, like, either a published codex or something available on any tablet or smartphone so we can be playing our game, not pause the game, say, hey, smartphone, look this up for me. And
have you considered a digital edition of World of Thetis? Oh, there we go. There you go. Ooh, cool. That said...
Stay tuned.
Yeah, stay tuned. We're kind of exploring, like, can we go further? This is going to sound weird, but also, you know, if you do need to look up something for reference, I don't know if you've seen the fan-maintained Dragon Age wiki. It's spectacular.
Fabulous.
They've done a very, very good job. They don't know what's up with Flemeth. Like, so you're not going to find that there.
I don't know what's up with Flemeth.
No, I'm not. I'm never telling you. You're too loud. They could hear you.
That's true.
Yeah.
Actually, on the subject of the codex, could we read the codex during the loading screens?
Don't sign me up, Mark.
We'll have to make sure no one has a patent on interacting with the game while loading. I wouldn't be surprised.
There actually are some patents.
Yeah,
in that
exactly.
Space.
So actually, you know, that's a weird thing, but it's a real thing. Somebody out there just squatting on doing stuff while loading game. But it's a good idea.
It's a good idea.
And worth exploring for sure.
I was wondering if you could say anything about possible animal companions. So either like a Sir Pouncelot or maybe a pet Nug or a Mubari. Anything about that in Inquisition?
I don't think we should at this point.
We're not going to talk about that right now.
You get a horse.
Yes. That is true.
That's pretty cool. I think at this point, animal companions are...
You get a mount.
Well, that's true. Fair point.
I don't know if other people play similar to I do, but especially when I'm playing RPGs, I tend to be a bit of a hoarder. So, especially...
Like you visit the Pearl a lot?
Wrong hoarder.
Oh, sorry, I misheard.
Depends on the playthrough.
Can't it be both?
I remember hearing in a few articles a few months ago about how the inventory system was going to be changed, especially from Dragon Age 2, where I'd have literally a bunch of junk. It was specified as junk in my inventory that I'd have to clear out. I didn't know if you guys had made any changes to that system or if you were free to tell us.
The junk tab got renamed to valuables.
Yeah, it's now called valuables. Isn't that way nicer? So a big part of it is that, actually we did rename it from junk to valuables. You are right, Chuck.
Because they are.
Yeah. No, which gets us away from weird cracked pirate teeth and stuff that you're going to find. You were pretty
exhausted.
My
favorite was truncheon lax. The guards dropped that. I am so tired.
Well, you don't want the blood to stick. So let's put it this way. So with valuables, our hope is that they're absolutely available for you to sell, but there might be some more stuff you can do with them. In a large part, we're trying to get away from kind of one note gameplay where if I've got diamonds and stuff, I don't think that the only option should be to just auto sell them by pressing Y or clicking a button. We'll get into a little more detail on that, but I do think that it'd be much nicer if we could explore, collections and maybe finding specific people that would value them in a way that just the shop wouldn't. So expect that to make some changes and us to move somewhat away from the, no, this is gray loot from an MMO. We're trying not to be there.
So it may not be time accurate, but... Cool. Is there any possibility of elevators in Dragon Age Inquisition? I love the loading screens. It was beautiful.
Hold on. I'm going to throw this back. Why are you asking? Do you want something specific to happen on an elevator?
I mean, the blank loading screens. I don't know. The Mass Effect love scenes were cool, but, the blank loading screens in Dragon Age, you need an elevator.
Okay, so
you got to have something interactive.
So what you're really asking is, without being anachronistic, is there a way we can reduce loading screens? Yeah, okay, cool. Because elevators, maybe in a dwarven
mine?
There
might actually be some more elevators, but they won't be used to move between for areas in Ferelden and areas in the Western, in Orlais. That is a long elevator.
Well, then, if we do that, we've made basically the new Total Recall.
That's true.
Yeah, which we're not making. I'm going to shut up for a minute. Jacques, talk to us about Frostbite and what it can do when it comes to loading.
Well, Frostbite is generally a streaming-based engine, which is what allows us to have these big, massive areas. We added the ability to punch holes through the terrain, which is letting us have caves and seamlessly enter those. So within sort of one zone, there's definitely a lot less load screens that you'll be experiencing. You'll still see, like you saw in the demo, the load screens when you're moving from one massive area to another. But within one zone, which is where you'll be spending larger amounts of time, you won't see any load screens.
Yeah, load screens inherently mess up your mojo, right? They break up your flow, to use kind of the term a lot of people use to talk about immersion. They break your flow, right? And suddenly you are no longer a noble adventurer on a quest to slay a dragon. You are a dude or girl on a couch, and you're holding a controller, and suddenly you remember you're hungry, and you put down the controller, and then you don't come back because you got a phone call, and when you come back, you can't remember what you're doing. You see what I mean? Like, it's very disruptive. So we are always trying to minimize that. But that said, when you're moving to, you know, a swamp from a desert, it's like, well, there we got a ton of stuff to throw out of memory and a ton of stuff to put back in. So, you know, it does happen from time to time. So that's we will minimize as much as possible, and I think our tech is a lot better for it now. And Jacques Steam's done some really cool work with stuff like the caves you can just go in. So
I think we have time for one last question.
The concept art that you've shown us so far is gorgeous and iconic, and I'm hoping to see some of it up on Cook and Becker so I can put it on my wall.
Chris Bain, are you in the room?
Bain, what?
God, he sounds like he's like on the floor.
In many ways, Chris Bain is always with us.
Chris, the question was that the concept art from Inquisition is beautiful, and they were wondering if at some point, or they were just requesting that at some point that it could be made into the Cook and Becker art.
You rang?
Chris Bain, everybody.
What was the
Chris
question?
Chris Bain, everyone.
Yay!
Round of applause.
Please tell me you're wearing pants.
I'm done. It's the pants off lounge back here at this point.
So Dragon Age Inquisition, Cook and Becker request.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Alright, so that's all the time we have. But don't go away because
and that brings us to the end of this episode's BioWare-based panel coverage. We hope you enjoyed listening.
Thank you so much. You can find us on Twitter at NerdAppropriate or Facebook /NerdAppropriate. Email us directly. That is Matt, Hillary with one L, Scott or Ash at NerdAppropriate.com. And we have over 100 episodes to check out. So definitely subscribe and let us know what you think. Thank you so much.
Bye, everyone.